Today on Vox Talks, after we suffer, do we become more altruistic? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Altruism born of suffering, or ABS, is the jargon term used to describe how individuals who've suffered in some way become motivated to help others as a result. Surviving a serious health problem, for example, inspires many of us to dedicate time and money to making the world a better place. But how many of us and how much money? A new CEPR discussion paper attempts to measure the scale of ABS. Sarah Smith of the University of Bristol and the CEPR is one of the authors. Sarah, welcome back to Vox Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thanks very much for having me on.
Anecdotally, we know this exists. You know, many of us will personally know someone who behaved in this way after they survived a health scare. So is it true what I said in the introduction? Your paper is an attempt to put some numbers on this.
Well, it's an attempt to put some numbers on it, but also understand the nature of altruism born of suffering. It might be the case, for example, if you've survived a cancer scare that you want to reach out and help a cancer charity. Mm-hmm. But what we wanted to know is whether people are suddenly becoming motivated to help charities generally, if they haven't been motivated to help charities before, or whether it's actually just a shift in the type of giving that people are doing. So the people who are motivated to help cancer charities are people who were previously motivated to help other forms of charity and now just switching their allegiance or loyalty from one good cause to another. That was the real issue, I think, trying to understand what is altruism born of suffering. Is it, you know, people suddenly becoming spurred to doing good deeds, or is it more a change in the type of charitable causes that people are supporting? And what we find is it's definitely more the latter than the former. So we didn't see anybody suddenly starting to give to charity who hadn't given before. What we saw is that people who had given to charity switched from giving to a whole range of different charitable causes towards giving more towards health charities.
So in measuring this, which health problems did you focus on and where did you get your data for this?
What we wanted to look at was what happened when people had an unexpected health diagnosis of quite a severe condition.
Yeah.
So we were looking at types of health conditions which can come on quite suddenly. So we looked at cancer, strokes and heart attacks. We were looking at data from the US, from the Panel Survey of Income Dynamics, because that follows the same people over time. So you can look at what they were giving before the health shock and after. And it has detailed information on the charitable causes that people are giving to. We can look at whether they're supporting health and other types of charity. And it also has the information on the health shock. So it's a really good data set for looking at this type of behavior, exploring a little bit more this altruism born of suffering.
Does this data tell us whether Americans give more or less than other rich countries to charity in general?
Yeah, we know quite a lot about giving across countries. I mean, partly from surveys like the Panel Survey of Income Dynamics, but also from surveys conducted by organizations like the Charities Aid Foundation. So they have a kind of world giving index, and they look at the proportion of people giving across, you know, a whole range of different countries spanning almost the entire globe. Actually, the US does stand out as being one of the more generous countries in the world. So it kind of depends how you define it.
Yeah.
So if you look at the proportion of people who are giving, the US is high up in the rankings, but not the very top, but it's just less than 70% of Americans report that they gave during the last year. That's slightly lower than, I think, New Zealand. I think it's even slightly lower than the UK, but it's pretty high up. If you look at donations as a share of GDP, however, Americans are the number one and are the number one by quite some margin. So on average, Americans give about 1.4% of GDP in total during a year, and the next best is about 0.7% of GDP. So in terms of the total amount of donations as a share of GDP, Americans are about twice as generous as the next best country, which is New Zealand. So America is a good country to look at because there's a lot of people giving and there's a lot of money being donated to a whole range of different charitable causes.
And in general, do we know why people give?
That is always the million-dollar question, I mean, literally, probably, for many charities. So economists tend to differentiate between two major sources of motivation, between altruistic giving, which is giving because you care about the goods and services that charities are providing. You know, you're giving to a cancer charity because you care about cancer outcomes. So that's referred to as altruistic, because you care about the sort of the public good that the charity is sort of producing. The other source of motivation is referred to as warm glow. And that's really to do with how giving makes you, the donor, feel. Warm glow giving would be, for example, you give to a cancer charity because giving to a cancer charity makes you feel good, or it stops you feeling bad, in a sense. So it could be that you really maybe care about the recipients, you feel a sense of reciprocity to them. Perhaps if you've survived a cancer scare, then you feel a real affinity to the people who are in a similar situation. And so you get a very personal warm glow from helping them. I don't think we should see warm glow as necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's still motivating altruistic behavior. It's just, it's giving rise to a whole range of different psychological pathways through which your giving gives you something back and motivates that donation.
Now, in the research here, you distinguished between giving to different types of charity. How did you split this up? Why did you do it?
Well, in the paper, we looked at health giving, obviously, and then we split non-health into religious and other non-health. I mean, the reason for doing that was quite specific to the US context, I think, where religious giving is much more important than it is in the UK and other European countries. When we looked at what people were doing before the health shock, around 30% of the population gives to health charities, but the proportion giving to religious charities in the US is double that. And also the amounts given to religious causes are much larger than the amounts given to other causes in the US. And I think you can think religious giving might be differently motivated to giving to other non-religious causes. So we thought it was useful to separate out religious giving from other non-health giving. There are interesting pathways through people's religious observance or religious attendance, which might also be affected by a health shock, which might have impacted on their giving. So people who have health shocks, we thought, might have a sort of spiritual change in them that might cause them to go to church more, and that might impact on their religious giving. So there was a whole host of reasons for looking separately at religious giving as opposed to other non-religious, non-health giving. And in fact, we did find differences. So, you know, what happened is that giving to health charities goes up. Giving to all other charities goes down. There's no change in total giving, but that comes through the other non-religious, non-health charities. Religious giving is broadly unaffected by the health shock, both the proportion of people giving to religious charities and also the amount of money that's going to religious charities. It's really a trade-off between giving to health charities and giving to other non-health, non-religious charities. The religious giving is largely unaffected.
What about that 30% that wasn't giving to charity before? Do they change their behaviour?
No, they don't. As I've said, we were exploring what the nature of altruism born of suffering was. Does it cause some people who've never given to suddenly start giving? And that's not what we see to be the case. So the people who start giving to health charities when they have a health shock are those people who were previously giving to a range of other charities. It seems as though there's a set of people who don't give to charity for whom the health shock doesn't have any additional impact over and above the other factors that might have caused them to give in the first place. So it really causes people to redirect their giving rather than causing them to start giving in the first place.
Do we know how long this effect persists? Is it like a 1 year effect, or do people change forever?
Well, the nice thing about the panel survey of income dynamics is that we can follow people over time and see what happens a year after the health shock, 2 years, 3 years after the health shock. The biggest impact is the year after. So I guess that the health shock is very salient in people's minds, and that's when it has the biggest impact on giving. So compared to a baseline of 30% giving to health charities, there's an increase over and above that of an additional 11 percentage points. So it goes from 30% to 40%, which is quite a sizable increase in the proportion giving to health charities. That effect attenuates slightly 2 to 3 years out, but it's still positive. It's almost as if it's very much in people's minds immediately after the health shock, but there is some persistence thereafter. That change in giving doesn't go away completely. It stays with people. Perhaps there are some longer lasting impacts of the cancer. So it's, you know, that they're reminded of it. We can't rule that out, but we do see the change in giving persisting 2 or 3 years after the health shock.
because it is a diversion of resources, can we say that ABS is an increase in altruism, or is it just basically the same amount of altruism with a different beneficiary?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what we're seeing in our data. It's the same total of altruistic behavior. It's the same amount of total giving, but it causes people to change where they're directing that altruistic behavior. The interesting case that we were looking at is a scenario where the individual experiences a health shock and nothing else changes in their external environment in terms of what charities are doing. But we know from other research that economists and others have done that what's really important for charitable giving is also charitable fundraising and what charities are doing. That's taking it to thinking about the current pandemic. What we have here is two things. We have a set of people who individually experiencing severe health shocks and seeing people they love experiencing this terrible health shock. But we've also seen a really big change in fundraising behavior. And I think what you definitely see in the UK post-pandemic has been an increase in donations going towards hospitals and hospices. A lot of people wanting to support the NHS and both fundraising and donating directly to the NHS. So we're seeing this playing out currently in the UK. COVID is obviously a combination of both a health shock and an economic shock. At the moment, we can't disentangle the effects of the two, but we have seen that redirection. So it seems as those initial results that we saw from the panel survey of income dynamics of how individuals' own health shocks affect their giving is manifest on a national scale with a massive pandemic hitting many people in the UK.
Well, yes, Sarah. I mean, even after the pandemic, many more of us will have one of these serious health shocks in our lifetime, and many more of us will survive them. So can we say that this might mean a secular shift away from giving to non-health charities towards health charities, or is that reading too much into this result?
I think that's an interesting question. Again, you know, I think it depends on what charities do as well. So what we don't know is what happens several years post a health shock. So it may be that although it persists 2 or 3 years after, perhaps the shift in favor of the health charities go away. And of course, other charities will be motivated to try to maintain their donation share. So we may see more fundraising by non-health charities. In the UK, we have a lot of the very large fundraising charities are health charities. I think individuals' own experience of health shocks and individuals' experience of friends and family having health shocks are important in terms of driving donations to them. But we've seen a lot of innovation in the fundraising sector. So I wouldn't like to use my crystal ball to predict the future too much, because it may well be that other charities, being aware of the impact of these health shocks on people's giving behavior, respond with their own fundraising initiatives.
I remember a few years ago, I was doing a news story about charity funding, and I was talking to the head of a children's charity who told me, charities like us have to understand we are all competing with cancer. And I was shocked at the time, but your research does seem to suggest that he was onto something, Sarah.
Well, that's true. Although in other research that we've done looking at the impact of shocks, we've actually looked at the impact of major fundraising campaigns by the Disasters Emergency Committee. So we're all aware that every time there's a massive international disaster, the Disasters Emergency Committee launches a big campaign. That has a massive effect on donations going towards international aid. So you can see people really responding to those debt campaigns. And there's no evidence that those campaigns crowd out other forms of giving. So again, when we're thinking about how people's giving to one cause affects giving to another, it clearly varies by causes, and I think also by how charities are fundraising. So I think fundraising effort can actually cause total donations to go up, even if these individual shocks might cause people's giving to shift around.
Interesting and important, and something that we're going to be looking at a lot more in the next few years, I would imagine. Sarah, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Tim.
You want to read the research? The paper is Altruism Born of Suffering, The Impact of an Adverse Health Shock on Pro-Social Behaviour. The authors are Nicole Black, Elaine de Gruyter, Dennis Petrie and Sarah Smith. It is DP15535 at the CEPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week. So subscribe to Vox Talks and you'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 10 years, it's actually more than 10 years, of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.